Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by giving you what I know about the top half dozen picks in the 2019 NFL Draft. Then Jenny and Connor come in for the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer. We are just 3 weeks away from the 2019 NFL Draft. And so to kick things off this week, before we bring Jenny and Connor in, I wanted to give you guys sort of an idea of what I'm hearing for the teams at the top of the draft. We'll probably do this every week until the draft. I know you guys are dying for any info on what's happening with the teams at the top. And so I'm going to run through the top six teams, and we're making it six, not five, just because the Giants are interesting. They're sitting there at number six. And then I'll have Jenny and Connor come in and react. Then we'll get to the news. Then we'll get to your mail. With the number one pick, I still think that Kyler Murray is going to be the guy. The Cardinals have to keep their cards close to the vest here, just because if they wind up putting Josh Rosen on the block, that declares their intentions. I do think that there's the genuine love is there for Cliff Kingsbury with Kyler Murray, so I don't think that that's a figment of anyone's imagination. I think that that's real. The question is whether or not they get to the organizational decision to draft Kyler Murray. I would bet on that right now. But who knows? Things can change. At number two, this one's going to be academic. If Kyler Murray goes first, I think it's going to be Nick Bosa going number two overall to the San Francisco 49ers. At number three, everything you hear about the Jets, including the way that they're handling their pre-draft visits, tells you they very badly want to trade down. And I think ultimately, if things go the way that I just laid them out with Kyler Murray going first overall and Nick Bosa going second overall, they may have a market for that third overall pick. If these quarterbacks can get hot over the course of the next few weeks, that all of a sudden becomes a spot for somebody to leapfrog Oakland and get in position to take a quarterback with the third overall pick. And, of course, the Jets would like to recoup some of the capital that they lost in the Sam Darnold trade. Remember, they don't have a second-round pick. Number four, the Oakland Raiders, and we're going to get into it a little bit more in the news, but they're looking at quarterbacks this week. And again, we're going to get into that. Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray. If it is not a quarterback, the name that I think was really interesting that I heard in connection to the Raiders that may be a little off people's board a little bit is Devin White. And, you know, I know there's a perception that, and I think it's a very real consensus in the league, the top two players in the draft are Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams. A couple people have told me that, you know, this could be Quinnen Williams if things fall that way. This could also wind up being Devin White, who, if he goes fourth overall, that would be as high an off-ball linebacker has gone in a decade. And so, be an interesting pick there. I believe Aaron Curry was the last off-ball linebacker to go that high. Number five, the Bucs. They're another team I've heard connected to Devin White. Again, this is one of those players that I think the league is a little higher on than the general public knows. And so I think Devin White, the middle linebacker from LSU, seen as a little bit better of a prospect than Roquan Smith was coming out last year, has a real good shot to go inside the top five. And then the Giants at number six, and I'm going to bring Connor and Jenny in now. I mean, there's still a part of me that thinks this isn't going to be a quarterback, and I guess more than anything else, it's the Giants are pretty far away, and like this isn't going to happen overnight. And so maybe it doesn't matter so much if they get their quarterback this year or next year. And I just look at Dave Gettleman's history, and it's, you know, in a lot of cases it's been drafting big people with the Giants, with the Panthers, investing on the defensive line. And this is such a great draft when it comes to defensive linemen. It's really, really easy for me to see him looking at the group here and saying, I'd rather have a D lineman, a stud D lineman, and maybe wait for my quarterback, whether I get him at 17 or next year in 2020.
I think it's easy to see that as well, especially last year. I remember Gettleman was saying there wasn't a consensus on the quarterback. There was consensus on Barkley. And this is one of those years where it's easy to see how there wouldn't be a consensus on any of those quarterbacks, especially at number six. So if you can get a really good defensive player, which they have a tremendous need for at six, maybe you come back at 17 if there's someone you like better for that value. Or like you said, maybe you wait a year. That to me seems to make more sense than taking a quarterback at six, which I think a lot of people would think would be a reach.
Yeah, and I don't think like I had a coach say to me the other day that this reminds him, Connor, a little bit of 2014 when you didn't know what order the quarterbacks were going to go in, right? Like, and I think it was one of those years where it was like, yeah, we like these guys, but there's not really like, is this guy a franchise guy? Is that a that guy a franchise guy? And if this sets up like that year, I think the interesting lesson from that group, like, look at where the look at like the order those quarterbacks went in. You have Blake Bortles third overall, bust. You had Johnny Manziel 22nd overall, bust. You had Teddy Bridgewater 32nd overall, good player, like, you good player who got hurt, right? And then I think it's pretty easy to see now, probably the two best quarterbacks in that class were the second rounders, was Derek Carr and Jimmy Garoppolo. And so I don't know, I think like if it's that type of year and it's really that kind of dice roll at quarterback, maybe the smart play is to wait.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they haven't really shown a willingness to move on from Eli Manning anyway, and you're still acquiring veteran offensive line talent, and, you know, you're still building your roster in this way. You still have Saquon Barkley in his prime. Why not just try to squeeze the remaining toothpaste out of the tube at this point, especially if you're not in love with anybody? And the worst thing that can happen is you lose this year, and you're in a better position to get, theoretically, a better quarterback a year from now.
And I think this should be said, too. The worst thing you can do is try to create a great quarterback prospect when there isn't one there. So if you don't believe there is one there, I think like pigeonholing yourself into that single year, that's how like EJ Manuel winds up going in the first round, right? That's how Christian Ponder winds up going with the 12th overall pick, when you're so dead set on picking one, right? That you're like, you know, we're not wild about this guy and we're not wild about that guy, but this guy's pretty good. We should just like that. I think that's how you wind up making a mistake, when you sort of, you work yourself into manufacturing something that isn't really there. And I personally think that that's the danger this year, is that like there could be teams where they look at it and they're like, oh, you know, this guy's pretty good. And then they start to talk themselves into it. And, you know, before you know it, and there's nothing worse than getting it wrong in the first round, too, because not only do you have the wrong guy then, but that also stops you from drafting one for a few years, right? So that puts you in a position where you're like, okay, like, now I'm not going to take one next year. I'm not going to take one the year after that. So not only do you have a player who's not great on your roster, it also prevents you for a few years from looking for the next one.
I don't know if that, you know, maybe that's changing a little bit, though. I mean, we've seen what the Cardinals have done,
yeah,
you know, or maybe about to do. And I thought even, you know, the Browns 2 years ago was interesting. A lot of people thought that DeShone Kizer in the second round, when every pick was,
right,
was instrumental to their rebuilding process, you know, they ended up getting rid of him, you know, pretty quickly and moving on. And that was a high pick, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe there's a sense that, you know, these aren't as valuable, or they're at least more movable than they were before.
It could be. All right, let's get into the news. We're going to start with the big news on Tuesday, which may not seem as like a big a deal on Wednesday, but it felt like a bomb was dropping on Tuesday. News topic number one, the AAF suspended football operations on Tuesday, less than 2 months after launching. Majority owner Tom Dundon, that's the Carolina Hurricanes owner, and an NHL owner, invested $250 million in the league in late February, and shutting it down was ultimately his call. Connor, I know you've made a bunch of phone calls on this. What's your prevailing thought after talking to some people this afternoon?
It's early on, but it just seems interesting that there's a whole league full of players and coaches that came into work today that, you know, maybe went out for lunch and then came back and they're not getting paid anymore. You know, they have to turn in their equipment. You know, they have to, they have to move back home, or, you know, any of that stuff. But it seems like just a league getting in bed with someone that they weren't 100% sure on, you know. And I think that the AAF, certainly, you know, the original founders, from what I hear, are kind of blindsided by what happened today. And, you know, it's crazy to think that this could have swung so fast, from getting this angel investment, from getting this influx of money, to shuttering operations right before Final Four weekend. You have the slot, yeah, on CBS right before a Final Four game. You slid Johnny Manziel's team into that. You're expecting sort of a ratings windfall there, and now none of that's going to happen.
And it like almost feels like an episode of Billions, the way Dundon rolled.
You're high
in
on
town.
Billions, by the
I
way.
I love Billions.
You've been
my
sneaking in
show.
Some
it's
Billions.
My
references.
Favorite show,
yeah.
But like, I think it is like sort of like they like the this guy swings like just rides into town. The White Knight, he's going to save the league, and really, I mean, look, here's the bottom line: he wanted the gambling technology, he wanted the data. That part of it's clear. I just think that whole piece of it's so interesting because it's like you make big promises, you make big claims, and then I think, what is it, 6 weeks, Connor?
Yeah.
6 weeks after you do that, you're shuttering the league. 6 weeks after, like, it's just, it feels to me like strip down the assets, you know, and then, you know, you get what you wanted out of the whole thing.
It speaks to the challenges of starting one of these alternative leagues to the NFL, right? I mean, what is going to be a viable plan? And, you know, is the XFL going to succeed? You know, that's the next, you know, it looks like Vince McMahon, you said, is doubling down on that. Yep. And, you know, are any of these leagues going to be able to succeed? And there's obvious questions why, or obvious reasons why a football league has a harder time, right? The cost of operation is more, the rosters are bigger. And then there's this idea of injury risk. So you can understand why the players union wouldn't want to share players with the AAF, because there's such a great risk every time you take the field. Would you want to be jeopardizing your NFL opportunity for a meager pay in this other league? So the idea is, can an alternative league ever really work in football? And to this point, nothing has been successful because the talent pool is always going to be, you know, less compared to the NFL. And there's always going to be these challenges unless the NFL were to support it.
I also think, like, there's, I don't know, like, I don't know, like, like, what was the carrot to watching the, like, for the casual fan, what was the carrot to watching the AAF? I don't know what that, like, and obviously they bring in Johnny Manziel, and I think that was actually probably a sign of trouble. You know what I mean? Like, I know other people, like, some of the people in the league were
that
thinking.
That can be said about many other leagues and teams as well.
But I think it was, like, I honestly think, like, it was, like, a sign that, all right, we're doing this the right way. We're going to be this developmental league. And then, to me, like going and bringing in Johnny was sort of like, all right, now they're starting to throw darts. You know what I mean? Like, now they're actually trying to do things they're acting. It felt like a move out of desperation to some degree, you know? Not, and this is nothing against Johnny, but, like, it's just, it felt like one of these, like, okay, like, we need to do something to drum up some interest because the initial wave of interest wasn't sustainable, you know? And I don't know what you can do. Like the biggest question, I think, coming out of this is it ever going to work? Because I'm not sure that it is. Like,
right.
Is a second league ever going to work?
Can any model work?
And I know a lot of people looked at this, Jenny, as, like, good news for the XFL. I don't know that it is.
I don't know that it is either. It sort of shows that the marketplace can't really support it.
Right, right.
I mean, what's interesting to me, though, is that, yeah, I mean, eventually it was going to have to be a developmental league for people to take notice, but they needed that initial, that liftoff, you know,
right.
What I mean? And so when you saw all the press stuff, you know, anytime that, you know, you were going to interview someone from there or anything, it was all about Trent Richardson, Christian Hackenberg, you know, look at all these, you know, guys that are fighting for their last chance, you know, in the NFL. And it was less about, you know, what I think that discussion should have been veered to earlier on was, you know, where are the 21, 22, 23-year-old kids who are going to be NFL mm-hmm. stars? You know, where are they? You know, how do we develop them? How do we get people to care about them? And that's the other hard part is how do you develop something like minor league baseball where there's an obsession about a farm system? You know what I mean? There are people that are just enthralled with farm systems.
But don't you think, like, I don't know, like, I almost feel like baseball is different too. Like, I think it's
it
hard
is,
to,
yeah.
Because baseball, like baseball parks and stuff, it's just like a big outdoor bar. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, let's go to the game, and it's cost.
Clearly, you've never been to a Hot Shots game.
it costs $7. It costs $7 to get into the, you know, whoever, the Hartford Yard Goats, right? Like, it costs $7 to get to the game, and beer is $4, and we can go down there and we can have a couple drinks after dinner and watch seven innings or something like that and then get out of there, right? Like baseball, I feel like, is more like, so baseball, I feel like, is a big outdoor bar. Like, minor league hockey, I feel like, is like people bring their kids to those, you know what I mean? Like, because it's nice and it's cheap and it's, like, you're close to the action and all of that. Like, I feel like these other minor leagues have, like, these hooks where everything with football is made out to be a huge event, and it's almost impossible to recreate that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think it's impossible to recreate what you have in the NFL or in college football because that's so ingrained. Like, I mean, Jenny, you grew up in State College. Like, Saturdays in the fall are ingrained in people's lives over a century.
Yeah, and you know, college football is the NFL's farm system, right, as opposed to baseball, right? So that's always going to be a difference there. And so, like Connor said, I mean, you're basically marketing players that are like fighting for their last chance rather than, you know, this next generation of stars. But it's never really going to be anything that, it's never going to be different from that, because players are always going to value the NFL opportunity over anything else.
Right, right. And I think there's probably, I think there's less willingness in football to go and play in a lower level league for guys who maybe have washed out. That's probably also like at least a little bit of a factor.
Totally.
Where I think you see like didn't Stephon Marbury play into his 40s in China,
but
right?
He was revered in Beijing. Right. Not only did he become a star in China, he won like 5 consecutive championships, and they did a Broadway play based on his life.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's like the vice president of China.
So he's like the Michael Jordan of China.
So that is a positive example. But I talked to Trent Richardson like earlier this year, and you know, he's saying that, you know, all these guys, you know, he's playing in these games and he's hearing from Reggie Ragland and you know, Drake Kirkpatrick and you know, any of these guys that who are, you know, in the league that played with him in college that are in the NFL, and it's kind of embarrassing, you know. I mean, you know, you don't want to be looked at as out of the league. You never want and it feels that way.
But
right?
I think there's also like the health and safety element to this too. Sure. It's probably there's like an element of, it's not worth getting my brains beat in. Like I played in the NFL. Let's say like you or I played in the NFL for 6 or 7 years, right? Is it worth it for me to go get my brains beat in to extend my career for a couple extra years for $50,000 or $75,000 or whatever it is? Probably not.
Go get your real estate license.
Right.
Yeah. Like
whereas in basketball. Or in baseball, just go play. I just want
to
play.
How many times did we like trot over to the Newark Bears Stadium when we worked for the Star Ledger? Because like ex-former MLB player was just like playing out a couple years.
Armando Benitez.
Yeah, I mean, that was like on the intern like tour, right? You go to the Newark Bears because like ex-player, I wish I could remember another example, but I can't at this point in time.
I think Canseco
was there, correct.
You might have been there for the Canseco.
I may have been there for the Canseco thing, yeah.
Oh, man, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so like exactly. Yeah. So like that, but that's the difference, right? In sports.
Tim Raines.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a good one too.
Yeah, so. All right, Jenny Connor, who wants to take news item number 2?
Whoever can open their phone fast.
I got it. Odell Beckham was introduced to the public as a Cleveland Brown for the first time on Monday, with the team holding a press conference with its new star receiver alongside Baker Mayfield, Myles Garrett, and Beckham's close friend, Jarvis Landry.
I want to apologize for the really dry headlines here.
Extremely dry.
Very dry headlines.
You could have dropped in like neon references. Yeah, you could have dropped in like the I love you situation that was being passed around on the
headline.
Something about like...
can you reword it on the fly?
Like an amorous... press conference.
No. Let's give Connor the chance. Connor, can you reword it on
Jenny,
the fly?
Jenny has a much better vocabulary than I do. Amorous would have been the perfect word to describe that press conference. Whenever I'm in need of a clutch word, I always text Jenny and I say, like, I need like a more powerful version of this.
I don't know what does amorous mean?
Just like, you know, like about love, you know.
Loving.
Love.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Like a touchy-feely like, press conference?
You know, just expressions of love exchange. I mean, the amount of expressions of love exchange there were like more than I've had in my entire adult life. I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
Did it seem to you guys like Myles Garrett was just sort of thrown in?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
hey, remember that guy?
Like he's like the bodyguard. Like, or he was like security.
It felt strange though, right? This is like this is a weird thing for the Browns, because I felt like they thought that this was going to start last year, mm-hmm. and that's why they ended up making the decision to open everything up and do Hard Knocks, and then they, you know, they couldn't get off the ground. But this year, it's like this weird embracing from the beginning. They're not even trying to hide the expectations, and maybe that matches the personalities on the roster. But it's just so foreign to any Browns fan that I've ever spoken to, in terms of like they learn to love so conditionally and like carefully, and this is like it's hitting you in the face.
I tried to think back, like, so when I was doing my column on Sunday night, I was trying to think back, and I think it was actually Sports Illustrated picked the Browns to either win or get to the Super Bowl before Belichick's last year. So that was 95, right? Like that was the year they announced the move, and then the team goes in the toilet,
right,
and all of that, right?
Right.
And so like I think that that's probably the last time expectations were at this level in Cleveland, where it wasn't just like cautious optimism. It's like, holy crap, they should be really good. Like, you look at their roster, and it's like, that's like a different deal, right? Like,
yeah.
Like the Niners last year, you may remember, and it's easy to forget, but like, are the Niners kind of a comp for this? Because the Niners were hot at the end of last year, had a good young quarterback, had a young coach. Like, it just... I think they're more
the
talented.
The Niners a year ago. Right?
Yeah.
What's the easiest way to tell on that? The primetime schedule before right. It's flexed. I mean, how many 49ers night games were we treated to, you know, at the end of the season when we didn't want to see them?
Yeah, well, and, you know, this is going to be interesting, though, because if the Browns, you know, do not make the playoffs,
who's it on? It's on Freddie, probably, right?
And there's going to be mass disappointment in Cleveland. Like, yeah. You know, now 10-6 is, like, not that big of a step forward.
Right.
Here, let me throw something at you guys because I think this is interesting.
Boy.
I'm throwing
spicy.
Yeah. So looking at, you know, Kansas City is in an okay place right now, right? But they're hard up against the salary cap.
Pending.
And there's some pending stuff going on there with some questionable draft picks that they have made.
And you know, it's like the star receiver, we'll see what happens with him.
Right. Too. You know, and so, you know, while they were built into a successful team, Dorsey kind of moves over to Cleveland and starts doing like almost the exact same thing. And like, I think Browns fans would take a trip deep into the playoffs. I think that would be more than enough to legitimize the operation there. But you're starting to see again, a lot of spending, acquiring of risky talent, you know, and is this sort of a repeat, you know, performance of like, okay, you're building a good team, but that one that is almost kind of a house of cards where that can tumble kind of easily.
I think that's fair because you take the risk on Kareem Hunt, you take the risk on Odell Beckham, different kinds of risks, way different kinds of risks, but
Callaway last year.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it's sort of like, he did it in Kansas City. I think that was more Andy Reid because Andy Reid's always been a second chance guy. Like you go back to Philly, T.O., Michael Vick, like they took risks on guys. They took big swings on guys in Philadelphia and Andy welcomed that. And so I think like Dorsey coming from where he came from, coming from Green Bay, where they'd always been so straight-laced. And it's interesting how many of those guys who came from Green Bay, John Schneider, Reggie McKenzie, like got out of there and wound up taking all kinds of risks, you know. But Dorsey's another one of them. I think in Kansas City, it was probably as much Andy Reid as anything else, like on the risk side, not the money side, but as far as the amount of risks they took. And now it's interesting because like I think Andy took those risks with like, I can figure it out. And now it's John Dorsey taking those risks, and he's putting it at the feet of a rookie coach.
Yeah, right. Rookie coach, right.
Right.
I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure on Freddie Kitchens. I cut you off, Connor. Go ahead.
No, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's perfect. Yeah. I mean, he was a coordinator for, what, 6 games? You know what I mean? And granted, he's been around, and, you know, anybody you talk to about him has said that he's this even-keel guy and that he can shoulder all this stuff and that he's very laid back. But, man, I mean
he's the quarterback's coach, what, 8 months ago?
Yeah.
And we were talking about how ideal the Browns opening was 4 months ago, right? And it was ideal, right? They're accumulating all these talent. There are head coaches around the league that wish that their teams were acquiring talent the way that the Browns are, I'm sure. But it is a lot of pressure on rookie head coach. Like, it's hard to think that a team that has a playoff drought would have that kind of pressure. But this is a lot of pressure on a rookie head coach.
And it sort of mirrors the Rams a little bit from last year, too. Right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The Rams saw an opening. They had a quarterback and a rookie deal, loading up. I mean, there are examples of this sort of approach succeeding and failing. It'll be interesting to see which way that goes.
And, you know, another factor is Beckham happy? You know, I thought some of the reports were a little bit odd coming out of Cleveland, right? You know, that you wrote, Albert, you know, that they were being flexible with him because he hadn't planned to be in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's had a big major life change and is wrapping his head around it. But it seems like he's, you know, Landry's really excited to have his best friend there. And I'm sure Beckham's excited to be with him. But it seems like he's having a bit of a hard time if you read between the lines of some of the reports.
I think he's happy to be with Landry. I think Freddie, to his credit, like I think Freddie's got the personality to handle these like all different types of players, right? Like I think he has the personality to handle it. You know, I think Freddie said it himself. Like they won't know until the first time they like drive into a ditch. You know what I mean? Like the first time, like what happens when they lose by 2 touchdowns and Odell has 2 catches? You know what I mean? Like I think that's the real test of it. And what I've heard in the past from you know, people who've been around those two is, and this is going back to LSU, is like when they were together at LSU, it was like they would just push each other and push, and it kept both of them in line, right? Because it was like you walk in the receiver room every day and you don't know if you're going to be the best player in there. Can they recreate that? Or is it like both these guys were sort of, one of the reasons Miami got rid of Landry was because he was like so insistent on getting the ball, and it was like a lot of it was about like, I'm the best player out here, I get the ball. And Beckham had some of those same issues. So it's like there's just, I think, some things that like with them at 26 years old, is it going to work the same way it worked when they were 20? Maybe because they're paid, it will. Maybe because they both have their contracts, maybe it will work.
You know, when you're little and, you know, you have like a friend in grade school and you think like, oh man, it'd be so fun to have like a sleepover at this kid's house, you know, because he's got like the best N64 or whatever, you know, and then you finally do it and the house is so weird, or like his parents are weird, or like something's weird about it. Yep. And then you just call your parents and at like 2 o'clock in the morning and ask them to come pick you up. You would just hope that like this isn't the case with Odell, where like he's finally him and Jarvis are finally having this
learning a lot about your childhood here, Connor. Explains a lot.
Situation.
Some insight that's, you know,
like the house smells funny, or like, you know, they don't cook good dinner, or like, you know, they have like
never had
like
this situation, so like, I'm not sure.
I think it's interesting. This sounds specific. Like the first thing you bring up is the house smells funny.
I have a feeling there's a specific name attached, or we're just gonna leave that off the podcast.
Well, I mean, like it's just like the general. The house smells funny was the first thing he brought up. This seems very specific.
They, you know, I don't know.
You want to share a name?
I'm really not thinking. It's like a sort of a blend
general,
of a few
feeling.
Situations.
Oh, okay, yeah. You know. Composite.
A
memory.
Composite. They have a cat, and you're allergic to cats.
Oh, yes.
Cat.
Yeah. Okay, the animal smell. The cat. Yeah. Get it. Right.
Yeah. Connor, news item number three.
Just before I read this, just to tie that in, yeah. I was just saying that I hope that now that Odell and Jarvis can have this fun sleepover together, they don't regret it. Like, it's not in a smelly house. Mm-hmm. Anyway. The Raiders hit the road this week to work out Kyler Murray on Monday in Dallas, and Dwayne Haskins on Tuesday in Columbus. It smells like Moose the dog. Oakland
Moose
has Derek Carr under contract for the next 4 years, and coach John Gruden and GM Mike Mayock have referred to him repeatedly as the franchise quarterback.
Well, see, now the script says as a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting little read there by Connor to make the franchise quarterback.
Projecting here.
I think they're looking at this, like, I think Mayock is looking at this in a very cold way, right? Like, I think he's looking at it like Derek Carr. I do believe him when he says Derek Carr is a good quarterback. Like, I think he believes that. Like, and he believes he can build around him. But I think they're also trying to take a cold look at it, where for Mayock at least, and Gruden's different, but I think for Mayock at least, it's all right, well, Derek Carr's on a contract that pays him about $20 million per over the next 4 years, right? So if we draft one of these kids, we're getting a guy at about a third of the price of that, which means we're probably going to be able to put three or four more good players on our team as a result of that, right? So that's part of the equation. The other part of the equation is Derek Carr, you can trade him for on that contract because that contract isn't exorbitant, and maybe you can get a nice return for him back. Right, so you're spending the fourth overall pick, but you're saving some money on the cap. You're adding a couple of good veteran players to your roster, and you're adding picks down the line. I think they're open to the idea of doing this.
It makes a lot of sense. Which quarterback do you think they would want? Murray, definitely, if he was available.
I've heard some stuff about them and Haskins. I don't know.
Plug for your Ohio State guy.
No, I mean, like, I think, no, look.
Skeptical of the information, Albert.
Murray, I mean, like, I don't think either of those guys, like, I don't think Murray or Haskins, I don't think those guys are for everyone, you know? Like,
right.
Like, Haskins just isn't that athletic. Like, he's a old school quarterback. He's a guy who would have gone in the first round in 1975, you know what I mean? Like he's just he's that type of quarterback, and Murray is almost the polar opposite of him. You know, he doesn't have Haskins' size. He's not as evolved a quarterback as Haskins, and he's way more athletic, you know? And so I think it's sort of what you like. And I wouldn't be shocked if they took a quarterback. I think it's going to come down to like them thinking that the Carr is good, not great. And the question I think then becomes, do any of these quarterbacks, and they spent time with Locke too. They coached Locke and I think Daniel Jones too at the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
So they had experience. They have experience. They're going to have pretty good background on all four of the guys now. Like, do they think that any of the quarterbacks have potential to be great because if they do, well, then they're going to be bringing in those guys at a cheaper rate for the next 4 years.
My concern would be, I mean, ideally, here's how it would work. You would take a guy at four. Carr's contract becomes infinitely more tradable next year, right?
Right.
It's so much easier to get rid of him after the, and next year, I think there's definitely a market for Derek right. Carr, you know, and I think there are a couple veteran teams that aren't going to get their guy this year, and maybe it won't be bad enough to get one in the draft. And so right. I think that'll work out. But you're investing a lot in the now also, right? You bought Antonio Brown, who's only, you know, isn't going to be here forever. You know, you spent right. a lot of money in free agency. Do you risk already knowing kind of the emotional composition of your quarterback and how he learns and how he's motivated? Do you risk bringing in his replacement right now at a time when, like, I don't think it would be insane to say that this team could have an outside shot at making the playoffs this
wow,
year with their
you've
talent?
Come a long way in them.
I did. You know?
Wow. This is the most stunning information.
I mean, their division is still brutal, but is anybody going to say that, like, you know, that Kansas City might not take a hit this year
they
or
might.
That, you know, or that teams might, you know, stumble a little bit in front of them?
I think you brought an interesting point up, which is the Antonio Brown factor, which is say that you were going to trade Carr, right? Like, let's just say they trade Carr now and they bring in a rookie, or the rookie's going to play at some point this year. Do you think the rookie is going to get good enough fast enough to be able to capitalize on what's left of Antonio
no.
Brown's prime? Like, I think that's the operative question now, because you did invest in Antonio Brown. It's like, do you think that, like, it's like one stock going up, the other stock's going down? Are you going to be able, because Antonio Brown's 31 years old, are you going to be able to get that quarterback in a position to play at a high level so he can get the most out of Antonio Brown before Antonio Brown's not Antonio Brown anymore? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, which is why the plan is sort of hard to see, right? I don't, you know,
Connor agrees
multiple
with that.
Directions, right? I mean, and
definitely
we see this with a
that.
Lot of teams trying to figure out exactly what they where they're working toward, right?
Right. Right.
I don't know.
He's just shaking his head. So we'll move on to news item number four. The Cardinals will host Ohio State's Nick Bosa on Thursday and Friday in Arizona. They met with him last week in Fort Lauderdale. The reason I put this news item here is because I want to talk to you guys about what the Cardinals should do. And
I like the pun earlier that the
yes.
Cardinals were holding their cards.
Yes. Oh, I was just
going to
bring that up.
Vest.
Yes.
That was
Where
good.
Was that? Was
you
that?
Said in the intro, you're like holding their cards close to the vest.
I didn't mean to do that, but yeah.
You did not mean to
I
do that, but I think
that,
we should really capitalize
out.
On this.
See,
right.
How cool would that, like, a meme be for the
yes.
Cardinals account to post, like, a folded arms picture of Steve Keim that says
or
in,
that
in angry Arizona.
Bird. Or
in,
the angry bird.
In Arizona, we keep our cards close to the vest.
Boom!
Would he have an actual, like, hand?
Oh, yeah. Like you're just like a backwards poker
Maybe we
hand.
We can create
yeah.
this to promote our
yeah,
podcast.
I mean, we could probably
would you go with Steve
that.
Keim holding him, or would it be like that angry bird? The angry cardinal bird?
Do they even, what is their mascot even?
It's like an angry looking cardinal.
It's just like a red Oriole almost.
You guys have seen it, right? Let me pull it up.
I don't know if I've ever seen
a red Oriole. That's
Hold
an
on.
Interesting.
Because their mascot is like an angry kind
angry,
of bird.
Right.
You know, well, I guess he's kind of happy.
Look, he looks pissed, doesn't he?
Oh, you just mean like I thought you meant like a physical, like
yeah,
plush,
oh, the actual the
yeah,
physical
the
mascot
the one that toddles around
yes.
the stadium.
I think he looks angry
toddles
too. Hold on,
is another great word.
I think God. He looks angry too.
Brushed up on thesaurus.com before recording today.
Oh no, he actually looks kind of happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that cardinal does look a lot more happy. I think we
looks,
go.
Looks
I think
happier
we go
than
with
the
Steve
guy in the
Keim.
Yeah, I think Steve Keim.
Steve.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
You know what actually would be great, Connor? I have a better idea. Or a slight upgrade.
That's not a poker face.
We're holding our cards close to the vest for now.
For now.
All right. So so what do they do?
Boom.
How soon do you think? I think that the really interesting part about this is, like, what happens with Josh Rosen? And, you know, because as soon as Josh Rosen is available, they are showing their cards, right? Like,
oh,
as soon as Josh Rosen is
right.
As soon as Josh Rosen is out there and we hear about him going to this team or that team and they're actually looking to move him, then we know exactly what they're doing. So I actually think they're going to trade Josh Rosen in 2019. They need to do it before the draft, because after the draft, Dwayne Haskins is going to be on a team. Drew Locke's going to be on a team. Daniel Jones is going to be on a team. Yeah. Will Greer is going to be on a team. And so you're going to have less suitors, right? And so as hard as much as you may not want to declare your intentions before the draft, I think they almost, if they're going to do this, they almost have to move Josh Rosen before the draft, because you want to have as many suitors involved as you possibly can. And naturally, once the draft happens, a whole bunch of suitors are going to come out of the mix.
I think they are getting a sense of Rosen's market. You see the reports.
Yeah.
There was a recent one last week that said there's a second round pick on the table. I think what that is teams coming to the Cardinals and saying, if he's available, this is our price, right? That's a way for the Cardinals to know the market without actively shopping him and going to teams and saying it, right? I think teams who might be interested are taking the initiative.
Right.
The only thing is worse than he's our quarterback for now is when GMs say we're not actively shopping.
Oh,
but
gosh.
It's like the equivalent of like when you're like scrolling through Facebook and you're not actively shopping, but then you get hit with a targeted ad and all of a sudden 2 seconds later, you've traded your franchise quarterback.
Right.
You know,
right. It's like when.
But we'll answer the phone.
It's like when Emily says she's not actively shopping, and then there are 3 Amazon boxes on my porch the next day, like that.
I'm a big active shopper too. Blame her.
You get a good deal, and you have to jump on it.
Right.
Correct.
And it's so easy on Amazon too. Like it's just all you have to do is press a button because all your info is in there. Everything.
I've gotten completely off Amazon.
I can't do it because if I get on there, like it's just way too easy. You know, like I think like there has to be like when you go to the store, there's a governor on it. You actually have to pick the item up off the rack. You have to walk it to. So you have plenty of time to think about what you're doing. Right. Amazon's just way too easy.
It's not the cheapest thing. Have you heard this thing where like there are people that, this is getting way into the weeds here, but there are people that go to like Marshall's and TJ Maxx and they buy something and then sell it for the original retail price on Amazon, which is almost like double what you're buying. You know what I mean?
Really?
So Amazon is just now like a hub for all these independent sellers that will go to like Marshall's and buy like 30 pairs of kids' cleats, like
so
football
they're scalp,
cleats.
They're scalping
absolutely,
kids' football
but for a massive profit. Yeah. I'm totally off Amazon. I'm off the grid. I'm a total cash in-person shopper.
I agree that. So there's this toy that I always get as baby gifts. Like Connor has received it.
The best toy in the world. Yeah.
It's this Manhattan toy company, Winkle. And I ordered it off Amazon once, but I noticed it's $2 cheaper on Target. Plus, I get the 5% off for having the Target card. So the Amazon price is like almost $3 more expensive. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
This podcast is finally taking it to Bezos the way that everybody else should have been doing years ago. I love it.
I actually was accused of wearing tinfoil hats last week in Arizona. So this is.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. So, all right. Jenny, news item number 5.
Patriots defensive coordinator Greg Schiano resigned Thursday, leaving the Patriots again with a gutted coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball. New England still hasn't announced replacements for Brian Flores, Brendan Daly, or Josh Boyer. It really is a pretty remarkable turnover, right? Everyone saw that being passed around where the only defensive coach listed was Steve Belichick, safeties coach, but they lost someone at every level, defensive line, linebackers, cornerbacks, and some of them for lateral moves.
I wonder if like I think we all think they're going to figure it out, but are we all like just sort of ignoring all of this because they won the Super Bowl? I mean, they lost their left tackle. They lost... the defensive side of the coaching staff was completely cleaned out, right? The quarterback's going to be a year older. Gronkowski retires. Edelman's a year older. They lose one of their best defensive players in Trey Flowers. Like, it's just, like, I feel like, I don't know. I'm torn between where I saw them in November and December, where it was like, God, like they don't look good right now. What the hell are they going to do? Because the roster looks like it's in decline and there are all kinds of logistical issues. And now a lot of those logistical issues I feel are coming alive. But it's because they won the Super Bowl. It's like, I guess you don't want to be the one like holding the bag at the end. You don't want to be the one like who like put himself out there or herself out there where you're saying like God, like this looks bleak. But I think if any other team went through the offseason they went through, we'd probably be looking at it differently.
Yeah, and I think it also has to do with the fact that some of these changes are ones that they went through last year, right? They also lost their left tackle last year, and they also lost their defensive play caller. I think because Belichick's side of the ball is defense, it perhaps seems a little bit less, right? It's not quite like losing an offensive coordinator who is in Brady's ear all the time, right? It's Belichick could take a more active role in the defense.
See, I don't think, like, I think the defensive play caller, I'm not as worried about that because Bill can do
he's
that.
He's already, Bill a more active role is probably a misnomer in
but
that
Bill can,
sense.
And Bill can do that. Like, what I think I'd be more worried about is, like, the position coaches. And I know that sounds weird because that does sound like you're getting lost in the weeds a little bit, but they've got 12 draft picks. And if they're going to have all this young talent on the roster and they've forever brought up guys through their system, like that's their way, right? Like they always bring up these young guys through their system and they get promoted up. And that's, you know, that's what Flores was. That's what Patricia was. That's what Josh is. That like so many guys have come up through the system and been position coaches and been in that position. And it's like, now you don't have that. Like that's where I wonder. Like, I don't think like the play calling is gonna be a problem. Like player development, though, like that could be a little bit of an issue, right?
Yeah, and the person who stands in front of the room, like that's why Flores wasn't that big of a jump or change from Patricia, right? Because he'd worked with Devin McCourty. They had a great relationship. He had a great relationship with a linebacker, so he was already beloved in that room. Yeah.
You know what helps though? The New York Jets, the Miami Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
That helps, but I think, you know, what I wrote a couple, or last week when this was announced, that I just think it's kind of interesting that this might be the best window into Belichick's sort of, you know, how he copes with this kind of stuff, and it might be the last time that we get to see it, where you're basically giving a Hall of Fame coach, maybe probably the greatest coach in NFL history, a blank slate, and we get to see from the beginning, how do you build a staff again? You know, where do you turn from? You know, and are you pulling from these high-profile advisors that you have on your staff, former college coaches that you have, you know, you're giving them a chance, or who are you putting into what positions and why? And I think it's like fascinating to be a kind of an outsider looking into that right now.
No question. Okay, so we good, guys?
We're great.
We're good.
Always.
We're good.
Only
3 weeks left to the draft, and we got a new studio in effect here. I think, right, Brandon? Like a lot of this stuff's new.
Yes. Beautiful.
It worked. I think everything worked well. So appreciate you guys coming out. All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. If I pick yours, then you get a little like on 3, 2, 1. All right, we're going to jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week on Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there. And you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one, this is from Doug McKay, at McKay Douglas. Who's going to start at linebacker for the Cleveland Browns? I picked this question not because there's any big mystery over it, but because I want to give you a little information here. So Joe Schobert, obviously a returning starter at linebacker there, probably going to be their middle linebacker again. Christian Kirksey, an established name there. The name I want you to keep an eye on is Jannard Avery. He's a guy they drafted out of Memphis in the fifth round in 2018. I'm just telling you, internally, they really love this guy. They think he can be a tone setter on defense. They think he was a real find. Not saying this guy is going to come out and be, you know, Derek Brooks or anything like that, but I think the Browns believe, at least, that they've got a long-term starter and a long-term tone setter at the linebacker position there. Question number two is from Nick. That's at NavSteets. Do you think if the Jets aren't competing for a playoff spot near the end of the year, Mike Maccagnan will be fired? And if the answer is yes, is it likely Gase will be a goner too? Okay, so I'm going to answer this question under the – I'm going to just kind of put this blanket premise over all of it. Whenever Woody Johnson comes back from the UK, things could change a little bit. And, you know, that's at least could happen at the end of the Trump presidency. So we're not that far off from that. That said, I still think that the Jets are going to stick to the plan. And barring any sort of internal discord, I think as long as they look like a team on the way up at the end of the year, then I think both Mike Maccagnan and Adam Gase will survive. I think that this is not as much about the final record, about being 10-6 or 11-5 or 12-4, as it is looking like you're a team on the upswing at the end of the year. Sam Darnold looking like he is a player who can at least compete to be a Pro Bowl-type player in 2020, if not more than that. You're getting the most out of Le'Veon Bell. A young defense is coming together. You're starting to see an identity that you were trying to put in place starting with the 2017 draft. So this is going to be really the third year of building for Mike Maccagnan. You want to see the corners start to be turned now. You want to see progress made. And I think ultimately what happens in that organization, a lot of it's going to boil down to everyone looking like the whole operation looking like it's on the way up going into 2020. Question number three from Quays Matador. Any ideas, and that's at Q Matador, any ideas in the Patriots succession plan at quarterback or anything you would like to see in case they don't land Rosen? I don't think the Patriots know what they're going to do at quarterback behind Tom Brady going forward. I think they're in play to take someone in this year's draft. I think it would be – I think if the plan is to find a guy in the second round, that's tough because usually franchise guys aren't available in the second round. If you look at the best starters in the NFL right now at that position, most of them are former first-round picks. So the idea that you're going to find the next Jimmy Garoppolo is a little tough. I do think Rosen – represents the chance to get creative with it, though. And it's the same chance is there for the Chargers, same chance is there for the Steelers, same chance is there for the Saints. I mean, even the Packers. Aaron Rodgers is getting a little bit older. You know, if you're one of these teams, you got an older quarterback, you know you're not going to be bad enough to draft one high in the near future. You have to get a little creative. And pursuing Josh Rosen to me would be a way of creatively addressing the problem, as we've said here in the podcast in over the last few weeks. Question number four. This is from Duncan McLean at Real Dunks, at The Real Dunks. Do you like the Howard trade for the Eagles, and will they look to cement the running back position in the draft? I'm going to answer that question in two ways. First, I think one of the things the Eagles do really well is they look at the overall landscape of each offseason, and they sort of assess and deal with everything all at once. And so sometimes that'll mean because they don't think the draft is particularly strong at position X, Y, or Z, they will go and take care of that position elsewhere on the veteran market. And so I think that that's what this was. Going and getting Jordan Howard to me was, I think, in a lot of ways, a reflection of what they think of the draft class and how they think the draft class maybe isn't – the draft class isn't what it's been the last 2 years. And so I certainly think that that's part of the equation. But if the right player is there, I don't think they'd hesitate to take one. I just think it's that they don't see an immediate answer in a guy who can carry the load, like Jordan Howard can carry the load, that's going to be available to them in the draft. Question number five from Frederick Levins. That's at Frederick Levins. Keep them on their toes. Give them this. If you were to choose a candidate to replace Roger Goodell, who would it be and for what specific reasons? I'm going to give you a specific name. That's Chris Halpin. It's H-A-L-P-I-N, Halpin. You may not have heard of him. He's the chief strategy officer for the NFL. And the reason why I think he's being groomed to be commissioner is because of the things that he's being put in charge of by those in charge of the league. He's being put in front on gambling, and he's being put in front on international. Those are two business ventures that are very, very, very important to all the owners. And they're not going to put anyone they don't trust in that role. And so the fact that he is both spearheading the international effort and spearheading the gambling effort tells me he's being put in a position where if he does a good enough job with those things, he could very well eventually be the guy who succeeds Roger Goodell. Not saying it's going to happen tomorrow, but he has the look of the guy who could eventually succeed Roger. Question number six from James Cunningham, at Cunningham James. Foregone conclusion, Rosen is traded. When is the optimal time for the Cardinals to trade him leverage-wise, pre-draft, draft, post-draft? I'm sorry, Brandon. This is bad podcasting. I think we already answered this, didn't we? We already sort of answered this one with Jenny and Connor. But what I would tell you, you got to do a pre-draft. If you're going to trade him in 2019, you have to do a pre-draft. Again, the reason why, Dwayne Haskins is going to be on someone's team. Drew Locke's going to be on someone's team. Daniel Jones is going to be on someone's team. The only reason I'm not mentioning Kyler Murray is because if all this happens, Kyler Murray is going to be on your team, right? So all those guys are going to be on someone's team, and that naturally takes suitors off the table. You want the most amount of suitors when you're shopping a guy, so I think you almost have to bite the bullet and do it before the draft. That's why, to me, the Cardinals have to come up with a decision on this by, say, Sunday of draft week. And if they're going to take take Kyler Murray, then make that decision at the beginning of draft week and start to shop Josh Rosen actively. All right, appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we love your feedback. We want your feedback. I appreciate those of you that come with the feedback. I actually had somebody tell me, believe it or not, that he wants us to do less writing and deliver more of our information through podcasts, which I always think is interesting because, honestly, like for me, it's an easy way for me to get information on stuff I want to get information on because I can listen to podcasts when I'm running, when I'm in the car. So like a lot of different ways to do it. So I love that sort of feedback, though. I want feedback from you guys on what can make us better. You can get me on my Twitter page with that, at Albert Breer, on my Instagram, at Albert_Breer, on my Facebook, at Albert R. Breer. As always, listen to our podcast. Listen to the MMQB Monday Morning Podcast with Gary Gramling and Andy Benoit. You can get both of us on one feed now, the MMQB NFL Podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Next week, we'll be 1 week closer to the draft. Same time. We'll see you then.